The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com, I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, today, I haven't seen this guy for a long time. His name's Brian Dobbins. He has a brand new book. Hey, it's a Western. It's Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail. Brian, welcome.
Hi, Mark. It's great to be back here again. Thank you.
You know, not only are we going to talk about this book, but we'll talk about some of the other books and projects that you have going. I know that also you're doing a film pretty much based on characters from the Coryville Trail.
We are. I'm very excited about that.
Well, let's start off first with Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail. You know, on here we see in silhouette, we see a cowboy with a horse and the sun either coming up or going down. It's a great Western picture. And a lot of these places that you talk about in here, especially in Wyoming, I've been to, which is kind of cool.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I should have talked to you earlier, because I'm just doing tons of research.
I think Laramie, one of your characters, mm-hmm. is pretty much in jail, or maybe they break out.
Mm-hmm. Laramie was where the territorial prison was. So some of these characters either are going in or coming out, one or the other, and a couple of them don't want to go back. So, yeah, that there are real locations in it, like Laramie and Rawlings, and then I've made up some towns too, because that's what I do. I make stuff up, and you know, if I'm going to portray a Wild West boom town. You don't necessarily want to say all this murder went on in Rawlings or Laramie, although some really interesting things went on in those towns.
Yeah, and in Laramie, I mean, you had the Fort Laramie where
Correct.
The prison was,
mm-hmm.
and they still have still some of the walls and stuff that you can peer down into and look, which is great.
I saw those photos because, you know, I do really exhaustive research. The Western genre is one of those genres that has really hardcore fans, and if you depict something incorrectly, they'll call you on it. They'll know because they do their own research. Some of these readers are in actors also, and when I make up a town, I can say anything about it. But when I'm describing Laramie or Rawlins or these places that really existed, Medicine Bow, got to be on the money, you know.
Yeah. So how do you do your research for that?
I am so happy that I am writing in the internet age, because when I'm writing, I've got my document up in front of me on the screen, and I just keep the internet open behind it because I'm constantly referring to it. There are times when I'll spend hours at a time researching, and other times I'll do it on the fly because I'm in the middle of writing and I got to know something now. And then later I'll go back and make sure I'll double and triple check and make sure it's correct. But I do a lot of it just on the fly like that, which, you know, writers couldn't do just a couple of decades ago. They couldn't be done, you know, or less than that. I'm just really lucky. As old as I am, I'm lucky to be as young as I am.
You know, with Google Maps, too, I'm sure that helped out. I mean, they have that little car that buzzes around the country.
I have maps bookmarked on my computer to keep referring back to them because you're more familiar with the area than I am. And so I have to rely on all that. And, of course, I talk to people, too, like yourself, who have been there. You know, and that helps out.
I think you got it when you said dry and dusty, and that's all you really need to know. Right?
Well, I discovered that Wyoming is pretty much a multi-climate place. You know, they have cold winters and hot summers and everything in between. So that's good for me because, you know, we live in Cincinnati, and our weather can go from season to season in a single day. So it's good to know what those seasons are like.
Yeah. I think in Wyoming and where I used to live in Nebraska, that we had a Chinook wind that come off the mountains from the north, and it might be below zero going to bed, and you'd wake up, and it's like 40 or 50 sometimes.
Wow, yeah, and that's the kind of thing I was picturing, you know. sometimes in Westerns, I've noticed, you know, they just show them riding, and, you know, the weather's always the same. And, now, these guys slept in the rain, and they slept in the cold. They'd wake up sometimes with a crust of ice on them, you know. It's just nature.
Well, the Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, introduce me, if you would, to your characters.
Sure. This is the second book in the Coryville trilogy, the first book being Coryville. And I'm picturing the third book is kind of in the works. I have another series that I'm writing on at the same time. The characters are Ethan Darney, who is... he was not an outlaw. He fell into the outlaw life very much by accident. And he's kind of a naive guy when we meet him in the first book. He's starting to wise up a little bit in this second book in Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, but not fast enough to stay out of trouble. By the third book, he's going to be a little more seasoned and a little wiser in his decisions. There's also the U.S. Marshals that are after him, Moses White and Wade Lovelace. They've been in there since the first book also. In fact, that's one of the challenges of writing this book is there are so many characters because the town of Coryville is populated by a lot of people, and a lot of those characters run throughout all three books. And then in this one, I do introduce a couple of new ones, too. The chief bad guy, Jack Stout, he's, you know, in today's world, we would call him a psychopath, a sociopath at least. He's just very much a fellow without a conscience. So it's not that he goes out of his way to kill people, but he certainly doesn't mind killing people. So,
and it's not Darby, is it?
No. Yeah. And that's that's funny you said that because they corrected him in the book, as I'm sure you know. Yeah, that's why you brought it up. Yeah.
Yeah, the marshal. I mean, you better get your facts straight when you're talking with the marshal, especially
right.
with what you read out of the newspaper, because, hey, these guys have been in the paper. I mean, they're on the run.
Exactly. You know, those two U.S. marshals, they've known each other since the Civil War. This all takes place in 1887 in Wyoming Territory. So it's about... you know, a good 20 years after the Civil War. And they were together in the Civil War. They became Army scouts after that, but were disillusioned by things. Well, they were at Sand Creek during the massacre. So they left that and became U.S. Marshals together. So they have a long history together. They're almost like this crusty married couple traveling around together. They argue, bicker all the time. They're both very serious guys, but Moses White at least has a bit of a sense of humor, and he's a little friendlier. Wade Lovelace just is not. He's just not a nice guy. Well, he's a nice man. He's a good man, but he's not a friendly man. And so, yes, he will call somebody on a mispronounced name.
Yeah, you know, Wade didn't remind me of somebody like Matt Dillon or something like that. Who would you say that we might have watched on television that maybe your marshals kind of take after?
Well, that's a tough one because I pretty much just didn't pattern them off of anybody. I'd say Wade in particular, gosh, I don't know. Just think of the most serious lawman you can, and you've got Wade. Moses might be a little more like Matt Dillon, who was very serious, but... he wasn't unfriendly, and he did have a sense of humor. So maybe, yeah, that could be a Matt Dillon type of guy. Not as tall as James Arness, but I don't think anybody was as tall as James Arness.
he was pretty tall.
Yeah, I read he was 6'7". That's before you put him in cowboy boots. That's kind of ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, Brian, tell me a little bit about the Coryville Trail.
Mm-hmm.
There must be a town called Coryville.
Right. In fact, the first book is called Coryville, and that's where a lot of the action obviously takes place. Ethan Darney and his cousin and another fella, after they are almost accidentally involved in a shootout in a fictional town, Donner, they go to Coryville because there is no law yet in Coryville. So it's quite a lawless place. There is, in particular, a saloon owner there who is, well... kind of a gangster, actually, by today's terms. But there are also a handful of citizens, like Mr. Burgess, the hotel owner, and Nora Brown, who is sort of the love interest in all of this, who are trying very hard to change Coryville to turn it into a real town. They're looking forward to a telegraph office And, well, Mr. Burgess, the hotel owner, is very, very much looking forward to a sewer system. So there is a core of people who are trying to bring Coryville up. And then there is this lawless factor who is very happy with Coryville the way it is. And when Ethan Darney and his two friends get there, they're kind of caught up in that turmoil. And then eventually the U.S. Marshals, Wade and Moses, find them at Coryville, and there is a huge shootout. And that's where Coryville itself ends. But of course it stays open for Ethan Darney to move on. And Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail sort of applies to several people, not just Ethan Darney, who keeps falling into these bad situations. The bad guy himself, Jack Stout, he has some pretty bad luck on the Coryville Trail. Some of what happens, and Ethan even questions this to his friend Fisher, why does this kind of stuff happen? How do we all manage to be in the same place at the same time for these things to happen? You know, and of course, there is no answer. Things sometimes just happen.
Coryville trying to grow up a little bit, and, you know, it's good that you have outsiders, people really that you don't know coming in, because right. That's a sign of a growing town. It's also small enough where when you see those outsiders, it might kind of be hard to rob a bank or something, because you're going to stick out like a sore thumb.
And they do. As you know, when Jack Stout and his two cohorts get to Coryville, they're barely there an hour before they shoot somebody and have to leave, because the town marshal they just look familiar to him, and that's all it takes is for that glimmer of recognition in his eyes, and they shoot him and run. And it's very much what you said. It's a tough life when you're an outlaw like that, because you can't stay anywhere too long. And part of what Jack Stout is trying to do in this is just get out of this territory, you know, because it's not going well for him.
You know, when they were robbing a bank in your new book, mm-hmm. Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, we had kind of the inside look at how they figured out when maybe the two guards, maybe one was gone to lunch, or maybe right. One of the tellers were gone, and when to do this. Usually when you read a book and they're going to rob a bank, you don't kind of get that backstory of how they're kind of casing the joint, I guess.
Well, here's the difference between the bank robbery in Coryville that Ethan Darney got caught up in and the bank robbery in Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail. The first one in Coryville, these were amateurs. These were just guys who were going to try to rob a bank. They were tired of life on the ranch, and which seems like an odd thing, but I actually have read that some of these crimes were committed by people who were just bored. These guys got bored with the ranch life and would try something like this. So that went completely bad. They tried to shoot their way in and shoot their way out, and it just didn't work. You've got to remember, the whole town has guns, and they all know how to use them. So that doesn't work. So in Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, we see professional bank robbers doing what you said, planning it. They get in and out before anybody even knows they were there. By the time the town becomes aware that there was a bank robbery, they have already left town. They know better than to try to just go in and shoot it up.
How did you come up with that idea of looking at these more professional bank robbers and putting something like that in there? I thought that was genius.
Well, thanks. I don't get that very often, ever. Part of it was just, you know, there's a logic to it, that if you do things repeatedly, you're going to get better at it. And the other, again, goes back to research. The more successful outlaws, real-life outlaws, did plan things ahead of time. They were careful because they knew. They knew what was going to happen if they didn't. So it was a combination of those two things, just logical thinking, again, something I'm not really strong at, but I try sometimes, and research, knowing that that's how they really operated.
You know, I hear there's kind of a film, if you will, and mm-hmm. Nothing really is on film anymore, I don't believe. I think it's all on videotape, and it's then brought to the big screen. But a little bit of you acting also. Tell me what's going on.
I wrote a short story using some of the same characters from the Coryville series. And the good people at Garnet Films, Lana Reed, who is in the studio with us right now, liked it. So with her help, I have changed it into my first screenplay. Actually, it's funny because it started out, it was supposed to be an indie short, but it just kept getting bigger and bigger and is now an indie full-length feature. And we're supposed to start shooting that in August, Lana? In August. We found this great location. I have to let people know about them. It's this little fake western town about 2 hours from here called Dogwood Pass. And the couple that own it are the nicest people you can imagine. And they have just opened it up to us for filming. It's fantastic. You can't imagine a better location. So a couple of the characters, like Moses White, are in it. Wade Lovelace is in it. And then the rest is just all new cast. And it's sort of a mini murder mystery in a western town. It's called A Dead Husband in a Western Town, in fact. And which was just kind of a fun title for me. And so Lana Reed, Garnet Films, has decided to make a movie out of it.
First movie?
Yes, for me. Not for them, but for me.
Yeah, what is your thought on a movie? I have been kind of on a movie set before, and it's mm-hmm. a lot of work. Hurry up and wait, too, isn't
it? Oh, my goodness. It sure is. We shot the teaser. How long did that take, Lana? 16 hours or something like that?
Roughly,
yeah. Yeah, for a very short teaser. And I'm going, wow, how long is this film going to take? Now, of course, now that they're familiar with the set and everything, it'll all move faster. And it happened to be a very muddy weekend, so all this equipment's being moved around in the mud and everything, which certainly slowed things down. A horse fell in the mud during the shot. But it's hurry up and wait. You are absolutely right. What has really struck me is standing there and watching all these pieces of scenes being shot, and then later seeing them kind of put together, of course, in this case, just a teaser, but still seeing them put together, it looks completely different. It was like, well, I'm thinking that didn't look like that when I was standing there, but it sure looks good on film, you know?
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that scenes are shot, it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle.
Correct.
You're shooting this and you take all that videotape or whatever that's on, just kind of pour it on the table, and then you have to, like, put it together yourself.
Right. Post-production, boy, you know, that takes longer than the film, actually. It takes longer than shooting the film. And it is in pieces, you know, a scene earlier in the film may be shot at the very end. A lot of times, you know, depending on the time of day, the daylight that's available. And, of course, everything has to be consistent. You can't the scene has to look true throughout. So it's subject to weather, time of day, the availability of the actors. You know, it's subject to a lot of things. So it is shot in pieces and then expertly put together.
So how's your horsemanship? I mean, that wasn't your horse that went down.
No. The fellow who owns Dogwood Pass is an expert horseman. And he was riding through a scene in his western gear, which is impeccable. And it was so muddy that the horse he was riding on went down. And everybody ran over to him, you know, and said, "Are you all right? You all right?" He says, "Oh, I used to bust horses. I've been thrown over fences. I've been kicked through walls." He said, "This is nothing." So he did. He just hopped right back up. Yeah. No, my horsemanship is a fledgling horsemanship, to say the least. I think I've been on a horse like twice. Luckily, I am not one of the actors. So, and the horse was not injured, of course. Yes, we should mention that.
I think you already asked or answered this next question, but the people that own the ranch, they have cameos, I guess.
They do. It looks like an Old West boom town that has risen up over whatever reasons. You know, the Old West towns would spring up around gold or silver or copper or water or, you know, anything like that, lumber, any type of material gain a town would grow up around. So it still has a very rough look to it, and he is building it that way to keep true to that. And he is being such a Western fanatic himself. Mike Montgomery is building this place very authentic looking. And which you'll see. Yeah. It's surprising. And it's a small place. It's a very small town. But, of course, the art of film, you can make it look as big as you want.
Yep, the magic of film, that's correct.
All about angles. Yeah, I can't say enough about that. I want to live there. Let me put it that way. He's actually building bunkhouses so we can stay there to shoot.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Hopefully he'll bring out like big pots, like you know, somebody that's cooking on the open trail or something. That'd be kind of cool too.
We can hope.
So what other type of scenery do you have? Do you have like the Conestoga wagons? I mean,
there will be a buggy. There is a buggy in the short. Well, I keep saying the short story. It started out as a short story. Now it's then it was a screenplay, and now it's going to be a film. There is a buggy that plays a pivotal role in the movie, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there is a buggy. Yes,
you know, I've been looking at a few photos, and that is a nice western town right there. I mean,
I know
that's gonna come yeah. right, that pops.
It does, and it's again with, you know, the angles of shooting and a little few tweaks here and there. You know, you feel like you're back there. You know, and if you're a western fan like I am, that's just the place to be.
All right, Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, of course, takes place in the late 1800s.
1887.
Yeah, right after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. In the West, there's a different kind of tone to the talk, I guess. It's mm-hmm. kind of a slow, drawn-out talk and stuff.
Yes.
And, of course, you know, if you were doing a pirate story, you know, you'd need that R in there, or a Southern... You know, mm-hmm. hey, Grant, you know,
yeah.
that type of voice. But with Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail, how did you find that voice to fit this Western?
I think of old movies, how they sounded in, really good old Western, you know, the John Ford Westerns and the Howard Hawks Westerns. And I kind of, you know, they're a part of my childhood anyway. And I kind of draw on some of the voices I heard back then. Also keeping in mind that the Old West collected people from all over the place. They came from everywhere, all parts of the country and from Europe, England. In fact, the bad guy in the first Coryville book was from Ireland. And, you know, he came here from Ireland. He became a gangster in New York City. There was a real gang in New York City, a real Irish band called the Pug Uglies. So I put him in the Pug Uglies. In the Five Points area, and there were draft riots at that time, and he was involved in the draft riots, and finally New York got too hot for him, so he came out west and landed in the lawless town of Coryville, which was perfect for him. But see, he was from Ireland, so there's that, you know, and there were English people, and a lot of some Scandinavians, a lot of Chinese, of course, came and worked in different arenas.
So I guess maybe the voices that you hear out west today are kind of like the combination, maybe a melting pot of
Correct.
Everything that's been out there. So what we're seeing back after the Civil War, a little different than what we might see today.
Very much, because, you know, linguists tell us that language evolves just like everything else. They speculate, actually, that the modern-day Appalachian accent is really truer to the Elizabethan accent than the modern-day English accent is. Because when they all settled in from England and Wales and Ireland and Scotland in the Appalachians, there were no outside influences, really. So the language patterns pretty much stayed the same, which, you know, makes you wonder what Shakespeare actually sounded like back then.
Although, you know, you can tell from the music
mm-hmm.
how much of an influence you have, whether it's Ireland or...
That is a great point. Our bluegrass music, our American roots music, uses the same instruments, some of the same musical patterns as Irish music, Celtic music, you know, the old English songs. Absolutely right, yeah. So it all grows out of something, doesn't it?
So what's next? I mean, it's back to Coryville one more time.
Right. I hope to have that done by the end of the year, but I'm starting to have my doubts because I've got the other series going also that you're aware of, the Jasmine and Sam Chronicles, which is completely different. It's a witchcraft detective series. So because I have these two series going from two different publishers, I take turns writing the sequels. So right now I'm writing the third book in the Jasmine and Sam Chronicles, and then I will write the third and final book in the Coryville. And of course, in between, I have this little film going on.
So without the film, what does that take? Maybe about a year each book, each series or book?
Yeah, something like that. My goal this year, we're still fairly early in the year, is to get this film done and still have the third book in each series done. I don't know if I'm going to do that. I'm running behind. But I should at least have the third book in the Jasmine and Sam Chronicles done. I would love to have the third and final Coryville book done by the end of the year, by Christmas. We'll see.
All right. Well,
no promises.
The Sam and Jasmine books, the Coryville books. I'm sure you have a website where if we want more information,
sure,
we can go. And maybe even find out more about the film, too, coming up.
Yes. You know, a lot of what we do now is on Facebook. I have my Facebook page is, my author page is Brian Dobbins Makes Stuff Up, because that's what I do. Garnet Films, who's doing the film, has their own Facebook page. There's also Twitter. To get a description of all the books, it's very easy to just go to the biggest bookstore in the world, Amazon. And you go to books and put in my name, and it's a beautiful thing. You put in the author's name, their author page comes up with links to all the books, which has descriptions of all the books. So there's all of that available, yes. And I was just told this morning that I have to make a website for Brian Dobbins, as a matter of fact, by the young lady sitting right over there.
There you go.
She's my boss.
All right.
Everybody's my boss, Mark. Publishers, filmmakers are all my boss now.
Well, you know, brand new book by Brian Dobbins is Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail. Hey, come along for the ride. Brian's going to take you back after the Civil War in the late 1800s. Coryville, you're going to see some of places maybe you've only heard about in Wyoming. Come along for the ride. Hard Luck on the Coryville Trail. Brian, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mark. This has really been enjoyable.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Brian Dobbins. Hey, look for the Coryville series, and stay tuned for the movie coming out, too. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.